Welcome back, everyone. We have an hour left with Nick Pope speaking about the British X-Files and other matters of interest. Nick is the guy who sat on the UFO desk for a couple of years and has seen a lot more of these files than just about everyone else. While we're waiting for some calls to come in, Nick, I had a question for you. It sort of stems from the Russian example I mentioned earlier. The Ministry of Defense over there had told me that they initiated their 10-year-long secret study of the UFO issue, because they were concerned about possible weapons applications, meaning they looked at these things, how they flew around, and were trying to figure out, how can we do that? Did you ever get an indication that there was any interest at that level in your country?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And certainly some of my discussions with the defense intelligence staff were configured around the idea, well, hey, look, you know, if any of this is real, there are things here in terms of propulsion system, aerodynamics, avionics, potential weapons applications. Absolutely, yeah. If these things can do the speeds and maneuvers that some of the evidence suggests they can, yeah, of course, we want that. And, that's when we say that we're interested in anything of any defense significance. That's, I think, as near as you can get to a definition of what that actually means.
And the stealth capabilities, that was what the Russians told me they were studying UFOs for.
Well, I mean, I think you can say with a degree of absolute certainty that we were working on stealth a long, long time before it was ever publicly declared, of course. Yeah, there are many, many characteristics of UFOs that we would absolutely love to have.
You mentioned a couple of minutes ago before the break, ghosts would sometimes, a lot of weird stuff crosses your desk. Did you ever see an indication where you had a lot of different kinds of weird, for lack of a better word, paranormal activity in the same area? UFOs, Sasquatch, Bigfoot, cattle mutilations, that kind of stuff.
No, not really. I mean, with the ghost sightings, it was certainly a case that there would be sometimes many sightings on the same site, and it would tend to be, which is interesting. It would tend to be sort of spots where there had been battles, for example. I mean, I remember one police officer telling me that. There was one particular site where a battle had taken place hundreds of years in the past. He said every time they went to cross the particular spot, the dogs, the hackles would rise, and they would really be quite spooked and things. And that's an interesting point. It comes up again and again in ghost hunting that animals are perhaps more sensitive to these sorts of sites than we are.
But no indications that the UFOs mixing in with other kinds of things that we would label paranormal.
No, I didn't get that.
Ever have any cases of animal mutilations such as we do here in America, comparable?
Yes, the some cases, particularly on Dartmoor, it's fairly desolate, wild part of the country down in Devon. Beautiful part of the country, and some unexplained deaths of sheep, but again, we never got to the bottom of this. Was it Satanists? Was it some sort of predator, or was it something more mysterious? So there are some cases.
Let's take a quick call, John, on our wildcard line. John in Long Island. Good morning. What's on your mind? Hello, John?
Hello, George. Hello, Nick. How are you?
Yeah, okay. Fine. Thank you.
Okay, my question is, it's like a 50-50 scenario in my mind. If aliens really did exist, UFOs really did exist, now why wouldn't they really make themselves known by just landing on the White House lawn and really making a mark? Why, you know, it doesn't seem that it's... something's wrong here. If they really did exist, we would know it, you know, by now, is my question.
Okay, well, I mean, the honest answer is that I don't know. I mean, I think one can say that when we look at the things that we do we sometimes say, well, why do we do that? How on earth we could get into the mindset of an extraterrestrial civilization, I don't know. I mean, one possible, I mean, this is simply speculation, but one possible analogy is that when we study wildlife, and this is assuming that studying is what it's about, but when we study wildlife, we try not to interact with it because, of course, the experimenter always affects the experiment. So if you're really trying to understand something and study it, you take a step back and don't interact. That's the only analogy that I can come up with, but I think the truthful answer is none of us really have the faintest idea.
But they've been observing us for at least who knows how long it goes back. But you should, you know, they should have the, you know, act together by now. They should land or either just disappear and never come back. There's not a happy medium here. There's no
depends.
Happy medium.
Yeah. Maybe they don't want to know us. I mean, maybe they look at the things that we do down here and they think, well, we better keep an eye on this civilization because they have developed nuclear power and they're beginning to take the first tentative steps out into space. But maybe they see the things that we do to our fellow humans, to our environment, and maybe they don't really want to know us.
Or even worse than that, John, maybe they look at us and consider us too insignificant to even give any second thought to. Thanks for the call. Hang on, Nick. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back with more of your calls for Nick Pope on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, everyone. We're taking your calls for Nick Pope, discussing the British X-Files. We're going to go to our West of the Rockies line, Bob in Salem, Oregon. Good morning, Bob.
Hi, good morning, Nick and George. I had a quick question. If I'm a security professional and I'm out quite a bit sometimes, you know, outside, and if I wanted to report something, who would I contact where I could, you know, remain confidential? You know, of course, local law enforcement, most of the time they'll just say, don't talk to us, we don't know anything about it.
Well, here in the States, there's the UFO Reporting Center. I think it's based up in Seattle, a national UFO Reporting Center, Peter Davenport. Nick, you know him, don't you?
Yes, I know Peter at the National UFO Reporting Center. That's one place. I think the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON, is another organization. And all of these people take witness confidentiality seriously because, of course, they know that if anyone has any doubts on that, they won't get any more reports. Here in the UK, it would be you could report either to police, to an Air Force base, to the Ministry of Defense, anyone like that. But in the States, yeah, those private organizations would probably be your best bet at having any meaningful investigation done.
Bob, have you seen something pretty good?
Yes, not actually on the job. I have seen something, it was about 3 years ago. Nothing, of course, that I could really prove. My daughter was with me at the time, and I just basically seen a light that got real bright in the sky. It kind of looked like almost like it was a meteor coming right at me at the same direction. And then it just stopped and went off at a right angle super fast and then just dimmed out to nothing. And it did something I couldn't explain.
So, Nick, if you got a report like that, it came across your desk, what's your first take on it?
Well, yeah, any sort of any change of direction and things like that tends to rule out meteors, fireballs, space debris, re-entering the Earth's atmosphere, satellites, things like that. So change of direction, change of speed, you know, those are sorts of things that immediately kind of get me quite interested.
Bob, why don't you send us an email about that sighting, and maybe we'll get back to you on it. We're going to go to our first-time caller line, Ryan in Seattle. Good morning, Ryan.
Wow, it's a really honor to be on, to be able to ask both you guys questions. I'm really a fan of both your work and you, Nick Pope. I really think you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
I wanted to make a comment and a question really quick. As far as the first caller goes, I think the reason why they haven't landed on the White House lawn is because they're not stupid. People need to remember that these aliens are smart. Unlike humans, I think they they have some intelligence behind them. Look at what we're doing to our planet, and look what we're doing to each other on this planet. I think human beings, some of them, there's so many people that are walking around with our head in the sand. Everybody's talking on their cell phone and looking at their BlackBerry and worrying about how much money they have in their pocket to even look up in the sky anymore. But anyways, enough of that. My question for you, Nick, is in the Reynoldsham case, you know, the sketches that Jim Pendleton made of the symbols on the craft, I just have a hard time believing that he drew those in such a fast amount of time. I think that craft was there for maybe overnight. How could he sketch out such a detailed drawing if it was not there for an extended period of time before it shot, because it took off into the sky? And then one other question was, when you were looking at radar, have you ever seen an object take a 90-degree angle turn when you were looking at radar? Are you able to tell us that?
Okay, taking those questions in reverse order. On the radar, no, I didn't see anything. I certainly saw evidence of UFOs tracked on radar doing fast speeds, but I didn't, in my time, see any kind of reversing or turns and things like that. But I think there were some cases on other tours of duty, and I've certainly spoken to some radar operators who've tracked that sort of movement. Jim Peniston's sketches are interesting, but it's important to remember there are two different versions that you can find on the internet. The sketches that most people are familiar with are fairly well drawn and symmetrical, but those are sketches that he did, I think, the day after the sighting. The original sketches are the sketches that he did in his police notebook, and I don't know if you've seen those ones, but they're they're broadly the same, but they're very raw and shaky. They do crop up in one or two documentaries, but they're not as widely known as the better drawn sketches. But as to how long the object was actually there, I think there's a degree of debate about that.
Thanks for the call. We're going to go to our wild card line, Simone in Rock Falls. Good morning, Simone. Where is Rock Falls?
Oh, it's it's in Illinois, but it's near Iowa.
Okay. Yes. Well, what's your question for Nick?
Regarding the classifications of the files, are there any that have been released or even not released that are classified above secret, if they're classified at all? And would there be any in the top secret levels, or even with followed by the acronyms COSMIC, DISCO, UMBRA, SPCAT, you know?
I don't think the British have the same classification system, but maybe Nick can address that. Were there different levels of classification for the files that you saw?
Yes. Now, most of the material, and of course most of the material, because it comes from the public, is actually unclassified. But there are some higher classified files that have been released. The highest one that I think has been released already is secret. We say here secret UK eyes only. There's a UFO. There was a classified study into UFOs called Project Condyne, which I think I've discussed previously on the show when it was declassified a couple of years back. But that's basically secret UK eyes only. And there are some other papers at that level. I can't recall anything top secret or top secret code word. Again, I can't rule it out. But basically, secret UK eyes only is, I believe, the highest classification that I've seen with UFO material.
And now that it's all been released, it no longer has any of that classification.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the way that we do it here in Britain, and I'm presuming it's the same in the States, is that if anything is released, it is by definition then declassified and therefore at the unclassified level.
Okay. Simone, thanks for the call. We're going to go to Hunter in Arizona. Try to get one more call in before the break. Hunter, good morning.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay.
Nick, I had a question about the United States investigation of the UFOs, if you would be able to comment on it. Yeah, the UK was obviously interested in UFOs and found it important enough to form an official and investigative group and saw that the UFOs were, in fact, a security risk. Do you think the United States is secretly investigating UFOs? Because it's obviously a security risk, and they've penetrated sensitive airspace multiple times in the U.S. So do you think that they're doing it and they're hiding it, or they're not doing it at all, or whatever?
I'm fairly sure that they don't have a dedicated UFO project, but they may. I mean, having said that, of course, particularly post 9/11, I can't conceive that if there's an uncorrelated target tracked on radar, that someone somewhere won't be looking at it. So I'm sure they are.
Oh, okay.
So in that sense, Nick, you think that there is a pile of information somewhere?
Oh, there must be. I mean, you know, we know that these things are tracked on radar from time to time. If you have an uncorrelated target in United States airspace, somebody must be looking at that.
You
whether
mentioned
it's called a UFO project or whether it's called, you know, uncorrelated radar investigation, I don't know. But I can't conceive that data like that would be ignored.
Back to the question of videos and photos. You've mentioned a couple of tantalizing possibilities, things that you've seen, and radar tracking incidents. And I'm just wondering, how would copyright be a reason not to release some of that if it is, in fact, collected by the military?
Well, on the photos and the videos, if you take a photo and then send it to the government, you still hold the copyright. You don't transfer the copyright. So, but I think I don't want to talk about this with any authority because I haven't been privy to any of the discussions. I just know that it's something that the Ministry of Defense lawyers have been grappling with.
Well, I'm thinking of like we've heard tantalizing stories here in the U.S. about gun camera photos, military planes chasing UFOs, gun camera footage that
I don't think the copyright issue would arise on that. Copyright arises when a member of the public takes something, but if it's government, it's not a copyright issue. It may be a classification issue, but I don't know.
Well, that would lead me to my question, which was, whether or not that would be released. And I guess you don't know because of the national security implications or something.
No, I can't. I mean, what I can't do, because, of course, I've signed the Official Secrets Act and it binds me, for life, even though I've left the MOD, I can't preempt the release. I can discuss material that has been released, but I can't preempt what the government will or won't release.
Like this radar stuff, is there any of that that is really, really compelling that you think would surprise people if it was made public?
Oh, there's certainly cases that will surprise people. Like I said, in this first batch of files alone, there's the great radar sighting with the two UFOs tracked doing 12 nautical miles in 10 seconds, and there's more like that to come.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back with more of your questions for Nick Pope on Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. All right, Elvis Presley taking us into the home stretch. We've been speaking for the last few hours with Nick Pope about the British X-Files, UFOs, alien abductions. Maybe we can get into remote viewing as well. When we come back, we have a few minutes left with your questions for Nick Pope. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, everyone. We have a few minutes left for your questions for Nick Pope. I want to ask one before we go back to the phone lines. Nick, members of Parliament, you mentioned that the Ministry of Defense doesn't seem to have a high level of interest in UFOs, as far as you know. What about members of Parliament?
Yes, there have been some MPs over the years who have asked about this subject. In the 90s, there was a member of Parliament called Martin Redmond who raised the subject regularly. Lord Hill Norton, of course, as a former chief of defense staff and chair of NATO's military committee, after that, went into the House of Lords, the other part of our parliament, and he regularly asked questions about UFOs. And now Norman Baker, who's a member of parliament with a particular interest in freedom of information, he's asked some questions on UFOs from time to time. And
what about the royals?
I can't really get into that. there have been persistent rumors, and but that's not really something I can get into.
Oh, we'll have to have a cup of coffee and talk about that one. We're going to go east of the Rockies, TP in Houston. Good morning in Texas.
Yes, sir. Mr. Pope, I'd like to ask you something. I did celestial navigation in World War II. Life depended on knowing the stars. In 1948, I sighted four reconnaissance craft, UFOs, over western Wyoming. And I was skeptical until Christopher Kraft came to head NASA, and he reported that he saw them, and the Navy took some pictures of them. In 1969, I talked to a gentleman, I don't know who he was, and I mentioned, I don't know how the craft got here from wherever they came from, but he said they came by, quote, a mothership. Well, then the Stephenville sighting came along, and I haven't seen pictures, but they reported underneath that major aircraft was a pattern of circular deals, which seemed to fit that gentleman's prescription that reconnaissance aircraft were carried underneath a mothership. I don't know why he knew that, instead of inside, but they were small craft, and I could tell that these were small craft, the ones I saw in 48. But I understand the Stephenville craft is as big as a football field or larger. Have you heard any reports on anything like that?
Yes, I have. I mean, the idea of, I guess, scout ships and motherships has been raised consistently over the years. Certainly there are cases in Britain where there have been very small UFOs reported, but we too in the files have reports of craft exactly the same description, as big as a football field. In fact, there's a case like that in the first batch of files released just the other day. I guess the idea of, just like we have aircraft carriers and we fly aircraft off them, the idea of having a big craft with smaller craft flying off of it makes some kind of sense. But yeah, so those sorts of reports have been received over the years. Yeah, very much so.
Thanks for the call. We're going to go west of the Rockies. Rebecca in L.A. Good morning, Rebecca.
Hi, good morning. I have to say, dang, because George, you kind of asked my question. I was going to ask about the royal family and UFOs, but I actually did have another question, since I guess Nick can't talk about that, he said. My other question then would be, have you ever gotten any reports that related to any of the ancient sites in England, like Stonehenge or anything like that, in addition to any correlation between the various, what are called, I guess, ley lines geographically in England?
Yes, not on the ley lines as such, but certainly there have been UFOs sighted in close proximity to sites such as Stonehenge, and indeed the Stone Circle at Avebury, which is another very ancient site. But I don't think, having said that, yes, there are UFO reports around those sites, but there are UFO reports all around the country, and there was nothing that crossed my desk to suggest that these were particular hotspots. So yes, we had sightings, but not a disproportionate number of them.
Thanks, Rebecca. You wanted to take another shot at the royal family question or not?
No, it's just, I
was just kidding.
It's a whole area where I don't really want to comment, I'm afraid.
I understand. I was just sort of joking. Wildcard line, Mark. Good morning, Mark. What's on your mind?
Good morning, George and Nick. How y'all doing tonight?
Okay.
Good. I want to thank you for a very interesting and well-done show here. You've really kept it going. I haven't been a dull moment here. I'm curious, Nick, about, out of all of the evidence, what you've seen, and by the way, may I ask, has your evidence in a professional sense that you've been exposed to actually been solely of United Kingdom origin and location, or have you gone on more of a global level in your capacity, in your former capacity as a government officer?
when I was doing the UFO job, my brief was purely national, and aside from the liaison over the Belgian wave, where we were interested just because of a similarity with the case that we had in the UK, there was very little sort of going outside the UK. But now, in a private capacity, I mean, recently I have become involved with the Coalition for Freedom of Information. And of course, that's an organization which seeks to bundle together compelling testimony exclusively from government, military, and aviation community personnel who've either witnessed a UFO or undertaken an official investigation. And I mean, there, of course, you're dealing with reports from the United States, the United Kingdom, from France, from Chile, from Iran, from a number of other countries. And if you go to the Coalition for Freedom of Information website, which is freedomofinfo.org, you can see all sorts of testimony. And of course, that has certainly convinced me that this is a global phenomenon that actually, as has been suggested previously, needs to be handled on an international basis and not on a purely national research effort.
Thank you for the call. We're going to go to our wildcard line, Steve in Maywood, New Jersey. Good morning, Steve.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay.
I have two things, one observation and a question. Last September, I was in the on the coast of Maine, and I caught an aurora next to two chemtrail jets flying east towards London, towards England, I guess. And that was in September. And about a week ago, I caught at least 10 or 12 jets flying very fast, and they will seem to be mirrored, flying over Englewood, New Jersey, north and south. And do you get any chemtrails in England?
Well, yes. I mean, this is a whole separate debate, and I mean, it's not an issue that I've looked into. I mean, I guess I'm more inclined towards the sort of skeptical view that these things are vapor trails, but, you know, we could probably do a whole nother show on that. So, yes, we see these things, but I mean, I'm inclined to believe that they're just vapor trails.
So, Steve, you said you saw chemtrails. You're flying and you saw chemtrails. How do you know they're chemtrails and not just vapor trails?
Well, because they last for miles through the sky from horizon to horizon, and they seem to sink to the ground. I actually saw one in Newark, New Jersey last year hit a building and break up. It got that low.
Well, that's pretty interesting. I don't know what the heck anybody be doing with the stuff. Saving us, hurting us?
I see them all the time.
There all were right,
several of them in a reflective jet. Because it was actually shining on the street as I was walking down a hill. And there was about 12 of them going north and south with these trails behind them, definitely doing some just below Mach speed, I would say.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to have to do a show on that one of these days because I get those reports, email and letters and phone calls about it 10 or 12 times a week. So we'll look into it, Steve. And if you carry a camera around the next time you see one land on the building, take a shot of it. We're going to go to our first-time caller line, Art in Colorado Springs. Good morning, Art.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Mr. Pope, as a undoubted expert in this, I'd like your opinion. What would it take, evidence-wise or data-wise, to get the British government to actually officially recognize that UFOs exist? And I'll take your answer off the phone. Thank
you. Okay. I mean, I think the answer to that would be some sort of artifact that government scientists absolutely said is off-world. You know, essentially, it would have to be something like that. With the best will in the world, testimony, even if it's from police, pilots, even if it's describing speeds and maneuvers that go beyond everything that we can do, even if it's backed up on radar, if it's just that, that's evidence but not proof. So to answer the question, it would have to be an artifact, whether it's a craft or some sort of other machine, but something obviously made elsewhere. That would be the answer to that question.
You would have to say, Nick, in looking at some of these files and some of the cases, that there's a heck of a lot of evidence. You start with eyewitness testimony from credible people, maybe pilots or police officers. Sometimes you get radar sightings that back up their version of the story. Sometimes photos, video. I mean, some of these things, it's pretty darn close to fact, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I think you made a very good point. Building up a case over the years, there is some compelling evidence. But I guess my point is that strictly in sort of taking it to the bank kind of answer, that's evidence, but it's not quite enough to say there's proof.
Same thing with your media. You know, I've read a lot of accounts of the story of the release of the files, and you know, a lot of the mainstream newspapers have a pretty good run with it. They're having a pretty good time with it, dragging out the crazy examples and basically poking fun. Is that characteristic?
No, I think, I feel slightly responsible for this because, of course, I worked with the National Archives on picking out some of these cases for the media, but I picked out a range of cases, some of which were obviously a little lighthearted, but some of which were more serious. I picked out some of the pilot sightings, the radar sightings, and certainly, I mean, most of the British media ran the story, but most of them did run a range of the material, the serious stuff as well as the lighthearted stuff. And indeed, I was commissioned to write features for some of the national newspapers. So the media gave it a fairly fair hearing over here. You know, the UFO files are full of a whole mix of material, some mundane, some lighthearted, some serious. And I think the media reflected that.
So that's good to hear. Then they could have done a really cut it up badly if they'd wanted to.
Yes, but although they did, as you rightly say, focus on some of the rather humorous cases, they certainly did feature some of the serious material too.
Good. Well, we're going to go to our international line, Mark in Toronto. Good morning, Mark.
Hello, how are you?
Okay, what's your question for Nick?
My question is about the Foo Fighter project that was started in World War II. Flying saucers that were built, and I'm thinking there's something going on where people are actually building these machines today and they're becoming more advanced. There's definitely something going on, policies in place to cover it up. I'm just wondering what Mr. Pope has to say about that.
Are you asking if there are, you think that humans are building something equivalent to the Foo Fighters, a small pilotless glowing craft?
Yes.
Okay. Nick, any thoughts?
Two thoughts. I mean, firstly, on the whole issue of us constructing things, I mean, of course, we are always developing and test flying aircraft and UAVs that you won't see at the air shows for 10 or 15 years. I think that's taken as a read. On Foo Fighters, the British government certainly has some files and documents on that. I think there's a very good book by Keith Chester, is it, on Foo Fighters. But it's interesting. Not all Foo Fighters were little balls of light. In the British government files, there is one Foo Fighter report that describes what is obviously a massive craft, several hundred feet long. And the Air Ministry, when they got the report, they didn't know what to make of it during the Second World War, and they just referred to it as the Wingless Wonder.
Wow, I'd like to read that file. We're going to go to Steve in Virginia on our wildcard line. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Okay.
2 points. Number one, if an advanced civilization was coming here, they would do like they do in Star Trek, which has a prime directive of non-interference, which
okay.
means they don't try to cover themselves up. Second point is, like the other gentleman was talking, if the government had these craft and were copying them, they're two sets of eyes they wouldn't want people to see. They wouldn't want the people here to know we have them, and possibly not letting those where they came from know we have them either.
Well, those are good points. Did you have a question for Nick? Or are you just looking for a comment?
Just comments, that's all.
Anything to add to that, Nick?
Well, I think that the first comment about a prime directive, I kind of agree with that. It's one possible explanation for not landing on the White House lawn. As I think, I mean, it's a well-known scientific principle that the experimenter has an effect on the experiment. So, yeah, taking yourself out of the picture when we look at wildlife, if we want to see how it really reacts, we don't interact with it. We sort of go in hides and things like that. So it's a good point. On the issue of would we disclose extraterrestrial technology if we did have it, I can see the argument certainly for sitting on it. I mean, one could make a case and say that the nation here on Earth that first successfully acquires extraterrestrial technology and develops faster than light travel, say, is going to be the dominant force on this planet for the next 10,000 years. So that's high stakes.
There are those who suggest that the ultimate truth, if there is some other intelligence visiting us, that the ultimate truth is bad, that that contrary to what most of us believe, we're not really ready to find out about it, that it might be something horrible and disruptive, and that somebody's doing us a favor by keeping the information to themselves. What do you make of that?
Yeah, it's a possible explanation.
Okay, we're going to go to Wayne in Halifax, Pennsylvania, east of the Rockies. Try to get one more call in. Better make it quick, Wayne.
Yeah, okay, I just want to know, the people in space and the space station, did they ever have a report of seeing UFOs up there?
I don't think from the space station, but there's a whole show that you could do on sightings from astronauts and who said what. Certainly some of the astronauts have had sightings, yes. Whether they're extraterrestrial or not, I don't know.
Okay, I have one more question. These laser lights you can buy in a book, when they reflect, somebody putting them up in the air, when they reflect looking like a UFO or somebody's, skimming across the sky with them, because I know I have one that's pretty powerful, you know, and when you hit up the sky, you can see a little red dot, you know, and well, I just wonder if somebody's fooling around with them.
Well, certainly a lot of UFO sightings are attributable to lasers and searchlights reflecting off clouds. Yeah, I've certainly come across that.
Thank you, Wayne, for the call. Nick, it's been an interesting conversation. I hope you and I are still alive when the ultimate story comes spilling out, if there is an ultimate story.
Absolutely, and I'll look forward to seeing you at the MUFON Symposium in San Jose, I think.
I look forward to it, and look forward to checking out your website and all the fine stuff you've got there, and thanks for joining us. Thank you, everyone, for being with us on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you soon.